Okay. Well, did that mean you did some teaching?
So in the beginning, they always pair me with American TA.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So the American TA would do mostly teaching. I would prepare. I can grade. So I think probably there is certain unfairness to the American TA because they probably had to do more.
Yeah. Well, I had in some interviews, foreign-born scholars had commented on how difficult it was to reach undergraduate students sometimes, just because as soon as they opened their mouths, the students would hear this thick accent and react to that. And did you?
I never really had to do much teaching because my co-TA would take up those. So I don't think I had much of an experience on that. Later, my language improved, and I didn't think it was a big problem.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
Okay. Well, so you decided on the Alberts Lab, and you get there, and
that was the biggest shock.
Now, there was no, how soon when you arrived in his lab?
It's the same day.
Same day. And there was no inkling that he wasn't going to be around?
Before that?
No. Yeah.
I had no idea. So I just walked into Bruce's lab. I moved over. I walked into Bruce's lab. And Chris Field, who was the manager for Bruce's lab, just said, "Yishan, Bruce has decided he's going to leave. He just told everybody in the lab, you better talk to Bruce." So I went to Dr. Bruce. Bruce said yes, and he was hoping that maybe I can find a different lab to go in. And I did try. I looked into Mark Kirshner's lab again. Tim said I could go to his lab by then. And I also thought about Jen's lab, another lab at UCSF. But I really felt Bruce's lab is the best place for me because Tim basically says if I go to his lab, I need to work on what he wants to work on. And Mark Kirshner said if I go to his lab, I can't work on centrosome. And actually, in the end, he even just decided, no, I can't go to his lab. So I was really depressed. I was really stressed out. I think that's the first time and probably the last time I ever cried in my professional career. I felt so backed down. I was like backed into the corner. I was like, don't know what to do. And Bruce was very, very nice. He just said, well, just stay. Don't worry about it. We'll figure it out. I think he was really worried whether I would be able to be independent and handle all these things and survive without him there.
And how did you just emotionally adjust to coming to terms with some kind of decision
to stay in Bruce's lab.
To stay or to leave, or how did you get past this point?
I think I passed it very quickly. It was because right away then all postdocs were involved in writing a NIH grant for the lab. So that was really a lot of fun because that really diverted all my distress. I was so happy because Bruce, I felt like he really trusted all of us. So each of us has a section to write. Then he's just such a wonderful editor. He took all of our thing, put it together, all different kind of style. He would just get it all together. It was really great. It was a great experience I had.
So one of your first things in the lab was to write?
To write a grant.
Yeah, okay. And so were there other students in his lab that were going to be staying?
Essentially, everybody at that point decided to stay.
Okay.
I think maybe in less than half a year, we knew our grant scored so high. And we got 1 percentile, something incredible. And Bruce was able to get me the money for 4 years as a postdoc in his lab. And so the finance in the lab wasn't a problem. So most students decided to stay. The students who rotated and wanted to come actually came and stayed.
Okay.
There were two students later on transferred, but that's due to various reasons.
Yeah. Okay. Well, how then did you learn biochemistry in his
okay,
life?
Yeah. So Bruce had a wonderful, I would say, long-term research associate. His name is Jack Barry. Mm-hmm. He's a wonderful biochemist. Mm-hmm. He taught me everything. So basically, I just wanted to do biochemistry, and every technique I want to learn, I just say, "Hi, Jack, can you come in? Or when are you going to come in? Can you teach me this? Can you teach me that?" He was just so patient. He would just walk me through every single thing. It was wonderful.
And what expectations did you have for your gamma tubulin project?
Yeah, so. Actually, I went through several projects in Bruce's lab.
Okay.
In the first 2 years. Like what I said, I'm just the type, I never felt like you try one thing, things will work. I've always felt you need to try a bunch of things, and if one thing works, you consider yourself lucky. So when I went to Bruce's lab, you know, I tried a bunch of projects, and none of them really worked, or in my view, I just don't think it has a really good perspective. Even though one of the projects I tried, Tim thought it was something I should follow up. I feel like, well, you know, I'm not sure what that would all amount to, so I just didn't follow that up. But in the end, I decided probably the gamma tubulin purification would really both fit my initial goal of wanting to do biochemistry and also really understand gamma tubulin as a complex. So that's where I went.
Okay, well, I just want to follow up a little bit on that a statement you had just made about you didn't, Tim wanted you to work on a project and you just didn't think you knew where it was going to go.
Yeah.
In a broad sense, what do you feel is the goal of your science? What should the goal of your science be?
What I really would like to understand is how centrosome is assembled.
Okay.
And how gamma tubulin participate in that, how centrosome nucleate microtubules. Okay. That was my main goal. Surrounding those, I tried a bunch of projects. And the project that Tim thought, it's really, that project was more of characterizing the dynamics of microtubules. I thought it was, it's interesting, but I'm not sure it's really, probably it's more like I feel it doesn't quite fit what I want to do, or I'm not sure what that will really lead to, because there are also other systems people have used to characterize microtubule dynamics. So I'm not sure what this will add to in terms of a big understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, and what kind of pressure were you under? You had just come out of this graduate degree with a very significant paper, but just one paper. And
I think
the same trend was...
Yeah, the paper, so I think the number of paper was a big pressure on me.
Yeah, okay.
The biggest pressure on me was that I realized that my fellow postdocs all know more than I do.
Okay.
I felt like they are so much more knowledgeable, so well-rounded in terms of, you know, criticizing other people's research and, you know, pull everything together. That was a tremendous pressure.
Yeah.
So I really try to read a lot more and try to really ask questions and, you know, just try to make up. I felt, you know, I mean, most other postdocs came from more famous universities in Bruce's lab than I, so I thought that could be the reason of lack of, you know, training. I don't know. I just felt a tremendous pressure that I felt everybody's around me just knew a lot more and is able to make a better story when they present anything.
Okay. Well, how well do you think you did in catching up with your fellow postdocs?
I think I did okay towards the end in terms of being able to, you know, go to a seminar, understand it, and ask questions. I think I did okay. In the end, I think I caught up.
Yeah.
On that, but I think my knowledge base is still not as broad as I would like.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about the project a little bit more about the project that you know was the hallmark of your time in the Alberts lab. And again, what was the expectation about the structure of...
There was no expectation. Nobody knew.
Okay.
So there was indications before my time. So the postdoc in Bruce's lab and the postdoc in Mark Kirshner's lab, they have shown that gamma tubulin in Drosophila as well as in Xenopus exist as a complex, because it seemed to behave bigger than it should.
Yeah.
So that's new. That's already known. So I felt, you know, if you can purify it, you might learn what it's associated with and what it looks like. And that's why I...
So like a fish, was it as like a fishing expedition, or were you fairly
confident? No, it's not a fishing expedition in this case, because I already knew it's in the complex.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very logical step. You just go purify it, and there's nothing, you know, imaginative about it.
Okay.
It's and a very standard thing. It wasn't easy.
Yeah.
That's the only
okay.
thing that's different. So I basically spent a whole year trying to use conventional approach to purify it.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to work out a bunch of steps, and in the end, I was able to see some band that's so faint by silver staining. So I already knew it's very minor. The protein is really minor. That makes purification very difficult. And then Tim suggested me. That was I attribute this all to Tim, because he was the one saying, well, why don't you try antibody affinity chromatography?
Okay.
And then that's where it broke open.
Yeah.
That's where, you know, that's when I made that antibody. I knew it should IP, because based on another study by a European group, that this antibody will IP, and then since this is a peptide antibody, I could use peptide to elute it. So that's where I was able to do it.
And how much electron microscopy had you done?
I really did very little.
Okay.
Mei Li Wong did it.
Yeah,
she's
okay.
the author on the paper.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, and how was Albert's lab to work in, considering he wasn't there?
It was a lot of fun.
Really?
Yeah. It was really a lot of fun. People are extremely supportive of each other, and you just feel like, you know, you don't mind spending long hours there, because you can. The other thing is, you can always find somebody out there, morning, evening, midnight. So it's just it's a fun place. It's not a workplace, more of a fun place, I would say. Yeah, it was really great.
Okay. And how well did you do working independently without Oakley kind of mentor?
I was able to do that pretty well, because I think I'm pretty communicative, and I'm pretty good at getting help.
Mm-hmm.
Once I know I'm not good at something, I'm very good at deciding who I should talk to get advice, and I'm not shy on that. I'm just very outgoing. I think this is probably one of the reasons Bruce decided I can stay in his lab. He felt maybe I wouldn't really completely get lost.
Well, when it came time to finishing up your postdoc, what were the possibilities and opportunities?
Yeah, so one thing is that, again, I only had one paper in the 3 years I was there. So it's, again, very thin. In my view, even though it's a significant paper, I felt it's really thin. So I wasn't really confident about going onto the job market. I think my husband was more confident that I should go on the job market. So we have two body problem. My husband is doing a postdoc in Mike Bishop's lab, and he wasn't ready for looking for a job. So I was actually hoping maybe I would stay longer, although my time in Bruce's lab would not be possible to be extended, because the grant ran out. Bruce didn't renew it. So I would have to go do something else. And Mike was very nice. Mike Bishop suggested, well, you know, you can. I would be supportive of you to become a research, a UCSF fellow, where you become independent. But you are still not a faculty, so it's a transition to, so that you can look for a faculty position somewhere else, or just at a UCSF. I was really interested in that, but my husband felt it wasn't a good thing for my career.
Yeah.
And he said, no, you should really do a job search and see what you can get. So I did a job search.
Okay. just take it back a second. How were you both looking for postdoc positions? Because you were both graduate students.
So I looked first.
Okay.
So the other consideration I had is I really need to look into centers where my husband can easily find a lab.
Okay.
So UCSF was really a good choice.
Okay. And what job opportunities were there when you went to look for independent positions?
There was a few, but not really that many. I applied to 30, but most of those are not really suitable for my background and my interest. So I was able to get 6 interviews.
Wow.
And I think I was offered 5 of them.
And what were your choices?
My choices were here and Columbia Morningside campus, the undergraduate campus. Northwestern Medical School, Worcester Foundation, now it's UMass.
Yeah. Okay.
And where's the 5th one? Rutgers.
Okay. Yeah. And at what stage was your husband in his postdoc?
We started about the same time, but he switched field.
Oh, okay.
So it really took him a long time. And when I was offered the position, he still felt he was not ready.
Okay.
So I told him if I do leave, I would like to come to Carnegie. And he felt this is also the best place for me. Then we had a decision to make. Either we separate and, you know, one of us take our child, or we stay together. Either I stay at UCSF as a fellow, or he come with me and continue finish up his postdoc. And I would be probably happy to just stay at UCSF, but my husband decided he would sacrifice himself.
Oh, very nice.
He's a very supportive husband. It's very unusual.
He's and really why, from your perspective, what, why was he willing to?
Well, he felt he was confident that he would be able to do fine.
Okay.
Coming here. Because he has a fellowship and he was able to work out that Mike said, it's fine, you can bring the fellowship to go to whichever lab you can find at Hopkins. He found the lab at Hopkins
okay.
with Shidan, and he continued finishing up his project in Shidan's lab.
Okay.
So
yeah.
So he decided to come. He felt it's more important for me to get this position because it's a really good position and it doesn't come up every year.
Yeah. Okay. And why did you choose Carnegie over the other...
Well, Carnegie, the most important thing for me to choose Carnegie is because it really reminds me of the environment I had at UCSF, which was so great. Essentially, it's very open. You know, you come in here, everybody's lab is open. You can walk into anybody's lab without knocking on the door or, you know, it's just, it gives me a sense of openness. And I felt the faculties here are all very genuinely interested in science, and also, it has this idea of, you know, do whatever as long as it's interesting.
Okay.
And that's what I like. I don't enjoy just you have to always follow a certain route. You know, you can jump out and do something different, and I liked that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and in comparison to UCSF, it's quite small.
It's very, very small.
And so, in the case of having to learn new techniques,
that was one concern. So, you know, if you at UCSF, you just go upstairs and downstairs, you will find somebody who can tell you something. So coming here, that was one concern. Then you have to go out of your building or maybe making phone calls. And again, I felt like I was somebody, I'm used to make conversation just on the phone, just call somebody up I've never known and say, hey, you know, I'm who, I'm interested in this and this, do you have time? In general, I found people to be extremely helpful. So I don't think it would be a major problem. If you do feel you need to use some technique, you ought to be able to get it.
Well, I guess in the remaining time, why don't we talk a little bit about your research program that as it developed here. I know from your Pew application that basically you're going to pick up your project that had resulted in the science paper in Albert's lab, and identifying
all the components,
the components of this ring complex. And on along the way, in your, I only have your publications and your and progress reports, that you moved into different areas, and that initial proposal kind of was shifted away into.
No, it's still areas. So. Basically, we identified all the components.
Okay.
We did that.
Okay.
But that's really not enough for all the people who come to my lab. I mean, I don't like to have people work on the same thing or relate the too closely related thing. I like to have people start exploring new things.
Right.
And that's the reason we started to do new things. And that continues in my lab. I guess it reflects my tendency of getting bored.
Right.
So I always like to do things that's different, so it will get me excited. Now I'm happy to read and really can focus on reading. If I keep thinking about the same problem, even though I read, I don't know what I was reading. It just doesn't register in my brain.
Well, okay, as an educated layperson reading your work, it made kind of reasonable sense that you had identified this ring complex, and that there were five or six proteins that you couldn't identify. So that was going to be the basis of your next, grant proposal.
Yes, that's been my
idea. So, where was the excitement in?
So, yeah, I have to say, this project has been going really slowly. The major difficulty has been that the limitation in the assay. We just don't have wonderful assays. I mean, of course, I'm not a structural biologist, so I felt really figuring out the structural organization of this complex, it should be a job of a structural biologist.
Okay.
So we have a collaboration with a structural biologist to try to figure that part out. But like any structural project, takes time. It also depends on the temperament of the protein. So that hasn't gone really fast, but it's moving, hopefully. And the other aspect of the project that's more suitable for the kind of lab I have is to understand how you regulate this complex in terms of its activity, and how you get this complex to go and bind to the centrosome, because that's where it functions, the nuclear microtubules inside the cell, the interface, and probably mitosis. Part of the complex is nucleating from the centrosome. So that has been what we really would like to know, and we have made a lot of effort toward that goal, but it's been difficult, and we publish, but none of those are, I would characterize as groundbreaking so far.
Okay.
We found proteins, we found they might be involved, but it's unclear. We don't have the best assay to really nail it. This is it. And that still need a lot of development. We're still working on that, but it will take a long time. And sometimes I wonder whether we can ever understand centrosome after fail and fail and fail multiple times. There are times I wonder, well, maybe there are certain things inside the cell are not meant to be understood. I don't know. Or at least not now, when the technology is not quite there yet.
Okay. Well, you're one of the few Pew scholars who, cites research from almost 100 years ago. You had mentioned in several of your papers reference Wilson's cell and heredity, and which is a 1895, 1890-something first edition. And how far has our understanding of
that organelle?
Yeah.
We have made a lot of progresses, like its duplication, how it goes from one to two during cell division. We've understood some of its regulatory control, and we also have understood, not my work, what its role in cell function. For example, now it's clear that it's actually having more of an important role in regulating cell division in terms of the last step of cell division, and also maybe after cell division, cell progression. The laser ablation type of experiments carried out by Alexei Kojakov, it was really beautiful sets of work. And then in terms of its functioning microtubule related work function, we've understood that gamma tube ring complex is the key microtubule nucleator from this ultrasound. That we have understood, but there's still really a lot to be learned. You know, how it's a very complex organelle, how it's made. I mean, during duplication, how you undergo this orderly duplication is absolutely unknown. I think it's a very exciting organelle, but at the same time, it's one of the most difficult organelle to study. I think one main reason is you only have one and it's tiny. So you just can't really approach it efficiently from a biochemical point of view, and genetics is difficult in animal cells. I think with RNAi, everybody hoped that it's going to really help one to figure out. But unfortunately, so far in our hands, some of the RNAi we did just didn't seem to do much to the centrosome. So I don't know.
My goodness, RNAi was the kind of the breakthrough last year, and it's not.
It's made by my colleague Andy Fire. I'm very proud to be next to somebody who's made such a huge contribution.
Right, but it has not opened the black box.
I'm not sure it's going to be even. I think it will help if we identify more and more components. And maybe some of the components can be studied using RNAi.
Yeah.
Some of them are not useful. RNAi is not useful, but some of them I felt should be useful.
Well, where do you think the major breakthroughs are going to be?
In the centrosome field?
Yeah, in the centrosome field. Is it going to be, say, conceptualizing new signaling pathways, or is it going to be a conceptual breakthrough, or is it going to be technological?
I think it's going to be technological. If somebody could really work out a very easy assay to study centrosome duplication, centrosome assembly, then that would allow one to really get to the components readily. I think technique, or somebody is able to purify centrosome in a good large quantity and in a really good purity, then you identify all the components. Then you can go back, study the function of each of those components.
Yeah.
But so far, just hasn't been. I have to say, even though we are studying it, I haven't put my whole lab towards making the effort toward that. I think anybody who has a leveled head wouldn't do that.
Why is that?
Well, you have to also stay afloat. You can't just get everybody to work on a project that will take you 20 years to crack. Also, people need jobs. People come to your lab. Graduate students need papers to graduate. Postdocs need papers to get jobs. You can't get one person after another to work on a problem that it's probably not going to work. So you can only sort of have each person try a while and then say, okay, now you've made enough, you've done enough time, go on, move on to do something that probably will be more productive.
Okay, well, what question do I want to ask first? Okay, where did the idea to look at this small GTPase
RAN
come
from? Oh, so it all came from a paper that's published in JCB that showed a protein that binds to RAN is localized to the centrosome. And when that protein is overexpressed, it induces ectopic microtubule esters forming inside the cell. Since we study gamma tubulin and I always read papers that contains those keywords. And so knowing that a very similar cytoskeletal system, actin cytoskeleton, is regulated by small GTPases, it was really very logical to suspect maybe small GTPase RAN could be regulating microtubule cytoskeleton. That's where we begin.
Okay. And you've also moved into a little bit different area of spindle assembly in mitosis. How drastic of a departure was that? And
I wouldn't say it's a very drastic departure. Okay. It's, I think, essentially I stayed in microtubule field all the time. You know, now we moved into spindle disassembly. But again, I don't think it's a drastic departure. I think a real drastic departure, I don't know if it's end up going to work, is what I'm doing now. We're trying to look at evolution.
Okay, in what ways?
So we're, I'm doing this as a collaboration with Doug Kushla, my colleague. We're hybridizing two different species of yeast and to look at the impact on evolution.
Okay,
on the hybrid.
Let me put in a new tape.